Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for subscribing on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks for telling a friend. I really appreciate all of your help in spreading the word about this podcast. For those of you who don't know, my wife Katie and I plan to take off for a year starting in August of 2017, and we're going to travel all around Asia. Along the way, we'll meet interesting people and have some long-form conversations recorded right here for this podcast. And I plan to keep it a weekly show from here until at least the end of the trip. So thanks for helping me make it possible. And on that note, my guests today are Aaron Draycott and Connor Grill. These guys have both been living in China for quite a while. Aaron has been here for around 5 years, Connor for around 2.5. And I met them on a lovely late afternoon in early spring on top of their roof in their Hutong apartment here in Beijing, China. We had a great conversation. We started talking about travel and the ways of the traveler and what it's like to live in China and move here. And we also talked a lot about their recent trip to Israel. These guys aren't just, they're not just going out to see all of the touristy places when they travel. They like to meet a lot of people, and Israel provided them with plenty of fodder. Although maybe I shouldn't use that word. A lot of the stories that they heard were tragic and sad, but always interesting. And I really enjoyed my conversation with these guys. So I hope you enjoy it too. Let's get into my conversation with Aaron and Connor.
A best friend from college came to visit over the national holiday that week. We were actually in Taiwan that week, and so he and his girlfriend, they just kind of stayed here and used it as a base of operations for their trip in Beijing. But he has also gradually gone into recording podcasts and making them and putting them on the internet.
Oh, cool. And his, well, you'll have to show me.
Yeah. Okay. It's cool. His is his focus for this trip was religion, actually, and he wanted to talk about, he was very interested in Christianity in China and what that looks like and what it seems like.
Is he a religious guy himself, or is he simply interested in what religion means to people? Or
he grew up Catholic, and like a lot of Catholics and just people in our generation, it seems like kind of grew out of it as he got older, and or at least questioned it more, and things didn't add up as much. But then, and so when I met him in college, I didn't know him before. He was more like going through the motions, kind of a practitioner.
Yeah.
And, but then, just since we've been out of college, I've only seen him a handful of times. He seemed to have undergone some sort of like revival, and I wouldn't call it like in a religious sense, but definitely in a spiritual sense. Hmm. Like reading religious books and educating himself in that way. And actually not going to institutions to find faith, but going to people. And just asking them questions about what they think, and then exploring that and kind of probing a little bit and just traveling around. They're big travelers, he and his girlfriend. And they got great stuff over here. They did a lot of interviews with underground churches over here, with legal authorized churches. They came to my classroom one day.
Oh, yeah?
And I actually got to set up a conversation with my students about, or to see what they knew, 7 and 8 year olds, about faith in God and just anything. And it was like, it was very interesting. It was like a third of them knew about God and believed in God, or were like raised up from their parents like that. Okay. About a third of them did not believe in God, like knew, was aware, but just did not believe it for whatever reason. And then there's like a third who had never heard of it and wasn't.
Yeah, just not raised in a religious environment.
Yeah, and so that was, and it was amazing to hear the sort of responses that they had to the topics that came up. And
did you record that one?
He did.
In your class?
With these similar devices. Okay. Yeah, and that's what he's used as material for. He's broken it up into a few parts. So he had his first part is like, I don't know, maybe published is what you'd say.
Yep.
He's almost done with the second one, and he's going to do his third one later.
But. Oh, cool. Do you know the name of it?
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Can you just say it so people can look it up?
No, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll apologize. I'll put up a link then. That's all right.
I think it's called Farming God, because he's an environmental studies major, and he and his girlfriend have done like, woofing in Europe? Mm. Or like organic farming?
Yeah, woofing.
Yeah, they did
wheeling
that.
Workers on organic farms.
Yeah, exactly. They did that for a year after college. They met driving the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile around the country. That was their job first out of college.
They both had that job, and
they take
it's like the love mobile.
Really, actually, like with the phallus included.
It is, yeah. It's all right there. Now that I think about it, it makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect. You're stuck with this person for 6 months at a time
inside of a wiener.
Right.
I learned all these rules about that Oscar Mayer does. So there's 12 Oscar Mayer trucks that drive around the country. They take different regions around the U.S.
Yeah,
and they take 24. Recent college graduates, that's who they like to take and they do publicity events, opening of stores or going to Oscar Mayer events or just, you know, just sharing PR about Oscar Mayer. And yeah, these rules are interesting because they do these two-person teams to drive them, and they allow girl, boy, they don't allow boy to drive. Really? It that's like something they must have lived and learned.
No, two sausages and one sausage.
Too many.
Yeah, none of that.
But it's cool. I got to see him two times while he was doing that year, and he got to drive me around. And it's like being a celebrity.
Oh,
like,
you could be in it.
I was in it with him. He drove me.
You just couldn't have the job with him.
Oh yeah. I went. He was.
Professionals are not allowed.
It was amazing. Like, you couldn't go anywhere, and everyone just lit up. With smiles, with like hollering, just like wanted pictures, were like asking questions. It was like he was a celebrity, but then, of course, when he parks the mobile and walks away, like nobody knows who he is.
Yeah.
So that was awesome.
Yeah, the
nice.
Cape comes off.
Yeah, exactly.
Turns into Clark Kent again. Yeah.
It was, so that was a cool experience.
That's kind of like, I think if I wanted to be a celebrity, which I don't really want, like to be famous, I don't think I'd want to be like really famous. Or like you can't go anywhere, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger level of fame. Like.
It's his own kind of prison, really.
Yeah,
I spend a lot of time thinking about that, actually.
But imagine if you're like a local newscaster in your city. Then you could, like, you know, walk around your city, people recognize you, say hi. But as soon as you leave your city, no one knows who you are.
Right.
But
that
might be all right.
That actually reminds me of the one thing I was in New York City. It was just 1 week right before I came to China. And I didn't see any famous people walking down the street, except for one who was... I think it's NBC. It was that guy's like Brock something. It's like Brian Williams' backup or something like that.
Okay.
He walked right past me. He has glasses. He's like a mixed race guy.
One of those news guys.
Yeah.
News looking dude.
Right.
That's the only one. But.
It's weird. Like, I'm from the Midwest, and so are you, I guess.
Yeah.
I would never like notice a celebrity just walking around. I imagine if you're from like Los Angeles, you just see him all the time. For me, it's not a part of my life.
Right. Yeah.
I've even like Katie and I were in Chicago like last year, and we saw this really big, tall and wide dude, and there was like this long line of people to get his autograph or something. And I'm like, oh, this guy must be famous, but I have no idea. He's probably some football player. But, I don't even know who he is.
There's a line. I want to go stand in it. It must be good.
Yeah, it must be.
It must be good. Yeah.
Right. Mm. So where are you from, Aaron?
I'm from Texas, from Houston. Houston, Texas, yeah. So much further south than you guys.
Yeah.
And
it's Midwest,
warm.
Right?
No?
You're in the middle.
Maybe southwest?
No.
I've heard it's quite warm there.
Yeah. So this is, the weather here in Beijing is very different. Yeah, actually, I have a pair of snow pants downstairs hanging over our shower rack right now, drying, because I didn't know that you couldn't really wash them. So now they're just like drenched and so wet. And so we've hung all their other clothes to dry, and these are just soaking wet.
I guess I wouldn't know either.
Yeah.
Do they have cotton, not cotton, feathers in them? Or
there's, like, yeah, there's like an inner lining and then like the outer lining. So I guess the lining on the inside just absorbed all this water, and I went to hang them like the rest of the laundry, and there was just like water coming out of it, and I was yeah, this would be my first pair of snow pants.
And there's like no dryers here in China.
Right, yeah.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
As a traveler, I try to avoid washing clothes ever. Yeah. Just keep wearing the same ones until someone says something.
Or body in general. Yeah. Who needs a dryer? You have the sun, right?
And
wind.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Au natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a bit of snow a couple days ago, huh?
Yeah.
It's kind of rare here.
That, and we went to Harbin last weekend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How was that?
It was great. Yeah. I bought snow pants specifically for the trip because everyone had told me it's going to be super cold. But we went. The sculptures were very beautiful. The ice sculptures. Yeah.
Yeah, I've talked about it before on the podcast. But just to say again, there's like this giant festival every winter in Harbin with these huge sculptures of ice.
Yes.
Katie and I went last year.
Oh, yeah.
Was it as cold as you thought it would be?
I don't think so, no. People had told me it was going to be the coldest I'd ever felt. It reminded me of Minnesota. So I didn't think it was cold.
We did Christmas there two Christmases ago.
And not so bad?
Yeah.
It reminded me of home. It was nice.
It was sunny. So, I mean, it snowed, but it was sunny and it wasn't windy. And
it was fine. Like managing expectations, like, so we went in there thinking we're gonna be so cold, and then it was all right. It wasn't as
right, so you could focus on the festivities.
Right. Of course.
How'd that go?
Yeah.
How was the ice?
I liked the sleds. They had like 4 inner tubes connected, and you could sit on them and slide on the
down
snow.
Slide.
Slide down like a ice slide.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
We were surprised.
That was fun. Scary.
Yeah, there's more like almost carnival game stuff there, like sledding or ice skating, than I was expecting. But when we got to do that, it was really fun. Most of it was just lines upon lines.
Right, lots of lines to stand in. So
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's. I was gonna say that's China, but
that's what I was thinking.
You know, the people, that's China. Lots of people.
Right.
But standing in line is a little bit weird.
Yeah. We found the only section where there was no line where we could climb up and slide down for free. And I did it, and then he did it, and we had a friend with us. She did it too, and then we went back up to slide again. The moment we were down, all of a sudden there was a line now to slide down this part that we had just found on our own to slide down.
You're trendsetters.
But I was like, you guys started a line when you could have just kept walking and kept like finding other sections.
That is interesting. Yeah. You're describing your trip to Yunnan as a place where like maybe 5 years ago nobody goes there, or just the occasional person out to the more remote areas. Mm. But then like almost like a big national line, like people catch on, people notice other people going, they hear about other people going, and then it attracts a lot more people, and then those people attract more people, where it sounds like in 5 more years, it becomes a place not worth visiting anymore.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me, I have this theory about gay bars, and there's, like, they open, and they're like openly a gay bar for gay people, and like women don't like when they go out to a regular bar, a lot of time they get harassed and they don't like it, so then they're like, oh wow, there's this bar, and they're like, no one's gonna harass me, okay, I'll just go there. And so then they start going in crowds, and then the men, straight men, go like, oh, there's all these women there, and like there's no one even hitting on them, and all these guys are gay, so, and they think I'm gay,
right.
Whoa, this is perfect. I have to like start all over again.
Remarketing.
It is sound logic.
It must be like a cycle.
Yes.
So I wonder if Harbin will go through the ice cycle.
Mm-hmm. I imagine so.
I kind of had this idea that it was going to be this smaller city, like naively.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's probably bigger than New York City.
It's huge. You know? Yeah. Population wise, it sounds
it's probably over 10 million. I'll have to look it up and whatever. But
our taxi driver told us, it was, he said that the, or at least, I mean, we didn't look it up, but what he quoted was 10 million. Yeah, that it is 10 million. And he was saying, like, they have more skyscrapers than here in Beijing. And I was like, for sure. Like, without a doubt. We landed and we were driving, and I was like, this looks bigger than Beijing. I mean, not sprawl-wise, but just the height of the buildings and how they're all collectively together. Yeah.
Yeah, Beijing doesn't have a lot of really tall buildings, just like Sanlitun. But most of the city's just kind of, buildings are like 15, 20 stories.
Yeah.
That's about it. And in this part,
apartments, if anything.
Yeah, apartments, buildings. And around here, we're in a hutong, this old neighborhood. And the, there's nothing over like three stories here.
Right.
We're right in the middle of the city.
It's nice.
And it's one of the biggest cities in the world. It's just weird to wrap my head around how that can happen.
Yeah.
It's cool going to, what's that park north of the Forbidden City?
Oh, Jingshan Park?
Jingshan. That, that view is amazing.
Yeah, that's a good advice. Like, once you get out of the Forbidden City, like, everybody's going to go there if you're coming to Beijing as a tourist. And then you'll get led out of the Forbidden City on the northern end, and you just walk across the road. Or actually, I think there's a tunnel underneath the road.
You could take,
Yeah, and then you, and then there's a park there, and you pay, what, like 2 kwai to go in the park or something?
It's probably like 10 or 20 now, I think.
It's not, a, it's an insignificant amount of money.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But it's really nice, and there's this hill in the middle of it, and that's the exact center of the city.
That's the best view I've ever seen in the city, for sure.
Oh, it's beautiful.
On a clear day, it's gorgeous.
Definitely something to do on a clear day.
Yeah.
Which we're having right now, and we're sitting outside on your roof.
Yeah.
Loving this. The spring is kind of right around the corner, maybe here.
My opinion, that's the best time of the year to be in Beijing.
When
Beijing's,
it's awesome.
When the air is clean, Beijing's a gorgeous city. They do a lot of things really well.
Yeah, beautiful. Really, like all the parks they have.
So many parks. So much just like love of plants, really. There's so many flowers. There's so many trees everywhere. Yeah. I like its gridded system. It's easy to navigate.
It's true, The all the streets pretty much are north, south, east, west.
Mm-hmm.
Public transportation is more prevalent than most cities I've ever been in.
I biked over here and right through the hutongs. I got stuck behind this young kid on a bicycle, and I was like, God, I'm gonna be late or whatever. I gotta go faster. And I'm like, I can't yell at this kid. He was riding a bicycle.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden he was like, yeah, yes, yes. And I realized, oh my God, this kid is riding this bike, his bike, for the first time ever. And his mom was behind him going, yeah, yeah, you're doing it. And I was like, oh, look at what I'm witnessing. And then as he kept going, he started like freaking out. He's like, like he clearly didn't know how to stop or anything. And I was like, whoa, look at this moment in time that I'm witnessing right
Milestone.
Behind him. Yeah, and then his mom ran past me, up to him, and like kind of grabbed him by the shoulder and slowly like slowed him down. And I was like,
wow.
The training wheels came off like right before my eyes.
Yeah.
Do you remember learning to ride a bike?
Nah, well, kind of. I remember being really young and riding a little bit around my driveway, but the milestone for me was when my parents let me cross the highway,
because
it was like my house and there were just farms around, and all my friends lived on the other side of the highway, and my parents didn't want me to go across.
What was the town again?
It's called Exonia.
Exonia.
It's a really tiny town.
You said it was south of Madison, or
Right between Milwaukee and Madison, like
how
halfway.
Do you spell that?
Ixonia.
That's what that looks cool.
And the story behind it is, about 150 years ago, there were some of the people in Watertown, which is the city next door, wanted to start their own little town, but they didn't know what to call it, and they couldn't agree on a name, so they put all the letters of the alphabet in a hat, and they had, this is really true, and they had this girl just pick out letters until they had something they could pronounce.
Yeah.
And they came out with Ixonia.
Wow.
So it's the only Ixonia.
Yeah.
I like that story.
Yes. I was thinking, is that Indian or something? I mean,
there's a lot of that.
Yeah. Or Native American.
In Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Yeah.
I went to high school in Oconomowoc. And Oconomowoc, every other letter's an O.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting how that part of the country, it seems specifically, is, I mean, our lakes, our towns, our, a lot of our roads are named after Ojibwe or Sioux.
Yeah, a lot of Native American names.
Native American influence, yeah.
What town are you from?
Actually, I'm from a suburb of Minneapolis called Plymouth.
Okay.
It's pretty big.
So that's like the opposite of Indian, right? Like that's the pilgrim name.
Right, yeah, Plymouth. And actually, the school I went to is called Wayzata. And Wayzata is a Native American term. I can't remember what it stands for. Hmm. But, yeah. Minneapolis, Minnesota is a nice place. I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. Katie's brother lives
yeah,
there.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Like right next to the football stadium, the new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
we just saw it going up a little bit.
Oh, did you?
Last time we were there, we just drove past it, but oh my gosh, yeah, that started right before I left for China, and now it's all done.
Yeah, okay. We were driving down the road, and I'm like, "What's that?" And he's like, "Oh, that has to be the new stadium." And I was like, "Yeah, that's huge. I mean, we didn't pass much big stuff, and then there was."
Do you ever get that feel like living abroad or living out here, where it's like, it's almost like those stories about being a space traveler and you come back and it's like 60 years later or 100 years later and everything's changed, or like you've missed so much, but like
it's,
you still call it. Sometimes I get that feeling when I go back, even
though
it's been 3 years, but like,
you haven't been home in 3 years?
Twice.
Okay. Yeah, it's true. It's almost like you know Einstein's theory of relativity, where if you like fly away from the planet at the speed of light and then for a year and then come back, and it's only to you it's only been 2 years, but to the planet it's been like 1,000 years because of the, I don't really understand it, the space and time are intertwined.
Science, something.
It's totally how like reverse culture shock feels, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Life keeps moving on without you.
Mm. You miss births, weddings, deaths.
All of it.
All sorts of things. Yeah.
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 It really has shown me how insignificant my own life is, like in a, you know,
compared
morbid
to
kind
others.
Of way.
Yeah.
Just like everything keeps happening. It doesn't matter if you're there or not.
Mm-hmm.
Does this seem like a necessary reminder for people? They should be reminded that.
I think everyone should travel for a while.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Beautiful thing. We went to Guatemala over the previous Chinese New Year. We met her long lost grandmother, which was just, speaking of milestones, oh my gosh. And that's one thing she said was, or Aaron's just been such a traveler her whole life. So her grandmother said, like, when you travel, you live.
Yeah.
And just, in Spanish, like, she doesn't speak English. We cobble together Spanish sentences to understand that. And it was, just. Simply put, that sums it up. It's gorgeous.
When you travel, you live. That's right.
Yeah. Mm.
I remember meeting this guy in Bolivia once in the jungle, just totally middle of nowhere. And he said he had two kids who had lived in the U.S. for a long time, and they recently came back to Bolivia. And I was like, oh, wow, good idea. Like, he said they were lawyers or something in the States, like really well-educated, highly paid. And I said, yeah, that's a great idea. We're speaking Spanish, of course, because you can make a lot of money in the States, and Bolivia is so cheap, you can just live forever. And then he said, no, that's not why. That's not why they came back. I'm like, really? Why? And he just said, in America, people live to work, and here we work to live.
Mm.
And I'm like, wow, yeah. That's some sage advice.
Yeah.
So
something
true.
Something to remember, yeah.
But it's easy to just kind of get caught up in your daily routine at home, you know, and forget that there's more to life than whatever, you know, your normal, your job and all of that. I've talked about this kind of a lot on the show, like with other guests, that life kind of can get compressed, I think, or time can kind of get compressed in your mind if you just keep doing the same thing. And I think there's something to it where your brain just goes, yeah, well, you just did the same thing for a month straight, so you don't need all those memories. Each individual day doesn't really matter.
Right.
And so I'm just going to compress that into a month of just, like, one memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it really... Mm. I don't know how it exactly works in your brain,
of course.
But it seems to work that way.
Yeah.
And when you travel, man, every day it just becomes this memory, this new thing.
Right. All of a sudden, I feel like when we travel, like, I remember breakfast. I remember lunch. I remember dinner. It's like
between those.
Yeah. But for me, those are, you know, the food. I'm all about the food. So if breakfast, then I'm like, oh, we went and we had this. Oh, and then afterwards we saw, you know, whatever. And then, yeah, lunch we ate. Yeah, I always remember by the meals. Huh. Yeah, when you travel, at least.
It's good to have these memories. I mean, there's so many great reasons to travel, but that's for sure one of them.
Yeah, I've heard this in a few movies. And it's like when you get towards the end, or when like that inevitable moment comes when you look back on your life. What did I do? What did I accomplish? What, you know, how did I live my life? Did I live it the way I wanted to? Did I live it the way I deserved to? Whatever. It's like that's what you have left. You have the memories. You have the experiences. Those are the achievements. That's what you have left.
And you probably think, I should have taken more days off of work.
That saying? Like, no one sits on their deathbed and thinks, like, I wish I would have come to the office more.
Yeah. No.
Oh, if I could have collated one more.
Yeah, right. TPS report.
Yeah, exactly. We saw, this is a little unrelated, but we're talking about deathbed reflections. Over Christmas this year, when my family tradition was watching It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to watch it with Aaron together for the first time. And there's just like a detail I never noticed before. This is like a placard in the back of the main character, Jimmy Stewart's father in the movie. And it says something like, at the end, the only thing you can take with you is what you've given away.
Huh.
It's like, that's gorgeous.
Yeah, I haven't beautiful. Thought about that.
I've never heard it put that way before either. I've seen this movie many times, and that one detail, it's there for 3 seconds.
It's like,
I still remember it. I'm going to remember it, you know?
Yeah, it's weird how that can happen with movies.
Yeah.
Like your favorite film. The good ones are able to do that. They can sneak those things in. Boy, favorite.
Good stuff.
I really like a few movies. Fight Club comes to mind.
Ah.
It's one of my favorites, even though I'm not a violent person at all. But just the message in there is so cool.
It's a well-told story, for sure.
Yeah, there's movies that I watched growing up, like, over and over and over again. Like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Mm. I've probably seen that movie, like, 100 times. But, oh, you know what? My favorite movie ever.
Here we go.
Okay, here. I just thought of it.
Yes. Eraserhead? just keep going.
Eraserhead. I don't even like to talk about this, but whatever, I'll talk about it. Like, the movie Memento.
Mm.
And
I swear it's my favorite, and I've only seen it once, and I'm kind of afraid to watch it again. And it's because, like, I don't want to give away any of the movie, but this guy,
seen it, yeah.
I mean, the premise is this guy has he can't remember anything long term, and it's like so beautifully, amazingly put together in so many ways. It's just got all these layers upon layers upon layers, but it really draws you in the way that it's structured. And I'm not gonna say more than that, but it draws you in to like the character, and you become that character, and like your memory isn't working as you watch the movie. And I've never seen a movie done like that. And I swear, after I watched it, I started like thinking for days that I had the same problem, that I couldn't remember anything, and that I was like this guy. And it was so disturbing that I thought I was like losing my mind.
Wow.
And it took me a while to get out of it. And I had no idea what the movie was about. It was just Katie and I were like at home. I was living in Madison, Wisconsin. And we just said, hey, let's watch a movie. And one of my roommates had a whole stack of movies. And we're just flipping through them like, oh, Memento. I never heard of this. All right. And I'm not a big movie guy. So we just picked it out, put it in, started watching. And that turned out to be my favorite movie ever.
Yeah.
Well, what about you guys?
That's art, man. That's form matching the function.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Where, like, what the message is.
Where it can
hit
you that hard.
How the story is told.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I think, though, I don't know what my favorite movie is, really. But I think that's the best way, is not knowing anything about, you know, what it's about to be.
Yeah.
That way you go in blind. You have no expectations. All of a sudden it starts. Maybe you're confused, but then they, you know, they clarify what the setting, what's going on, and all of a sudden you're able to get into it even more. because you don't have this idea of what it should be, because you've never seen a commercial, you've never seen a advertisement for it. Like, yeah, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's the best.
Perfect. Yeah, you're able to just enjoy it.
No, no prejudices going in.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, your reaction to seeing it, the aftermath and those few days after that, reminds me of a book I read one time. It was Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace.
Oh, I know. I've heard of this. I haven't read it.
Yeah, that's like his mammoth masterpiece. David Foster Wallace is pretty cool. But his book is like 1,200 pages, and it's just a monolith. It's a tome. Mm. And in a nutshell, what it's about is this semi-failed, semi-genius inventor who makes a movie, and it's a movie about addiction, and in itself is the most addicting movie ever. So that, like, someone starts watching it and they can't stop watching it, and they watch it so much that they die. Like, they cease all other functions. They can only watch this movie.
Okay.
And they just, like, lose themselves. And there's of course all these little, like, subplots and different things that weave throughout. But it was really difficult to read this book initially. Like, the first 100 pages were a slog. But then after that, it, like, sort of tripped something, and I couldn't stop reading it. And I kept reading. This was my senior year of college. And about halfway through the book, it got to this point where, like, I couldn't stop reading it. Like, I stopped going to class. I stopped submitting, like, homework assignments and that. I was just reading this book.
So it's affecting
your
life.
It did what it was about, which I've never experienced from any movie, book, or anything, especially a book. Like, that, oh, man.
So I shouldn't start reading that unless I'm, like, on a desert island or something. Huh?
It is a desert island book. I've heard it described. Like, that is a desert island book, for sure. There's a lot of amazing books out there. That's up there, top three for sure, best books I've ever read. Yeah,
that's why I like to read really boring books.
Moby Dick.
I don't get caught up too much in it. Yeah. I can actually live my life.
But just my little point is just like how art can, right place, right time. Like, what they put out, you received at the right moment, and it can just transform something. It can just change something. Like, doesn't matter what it is—a visual painting, music, movie, book. Like, if what they're putting out there meets you at the right time in your life, magic. Like that to me.
That's a masterpiece. That's the sign of it.
That's spirituality. That's holy right there.
Mm. Wow. Well, so speaking of spirituality and holiness, we should talk about Israel.
Oh, yeah, we probably should.
You guys went there recently, huh?
Yeah. We flew into Tel Aviv, and we spent our first couple days there. It was great. The city itself has a lot of art all over the place, street art. Different things on the outside of the buildings, the little shed doors that covered the shops. All of them had huge murals on them. We had noticed this image that looked like a hand, like a bird or a hand. And we asked a few people, like, what does this image mean? And so many of the local people were like, oh, I had never noticed it. And I was like, it is in at least, I mean,
it's like half of
it. Yeah, half of all the different art we had seen was the same bird-like image. And
like an artist symbol or something like that.
Yeah, something that they kept putting in all these different...
was cool.
Yeah, I could definitely empathize with that feeling. Like, this not related to art at all, but I used to work as a computer programmer, software engineer. And there were multiple times where I'm working on a piece of code and just looking at it and trying to figure out what the problem is. There's something wrong for hours and hours and hours. And I would just, like, give it to my coworker who hadn't seen the code yet and just go, can you just take a look at this and tell me? And then he'd go, oh yeah, there's your problem.
Right.
Like, it's just because he's never seen it before. Mm-hmm. And I'm just too deeply embedded in it.
Yeah.
Like, can't see the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Yeah. That's an interesting phenomenon. what was cool, and this was something we saw throughout Israel, was this sort of like, not just tolerance for this sort of street art, but like active encouragement, where we're like, you do that here, maybe you get arrested. I don't know, maybe, but...
Yeah, maybe you know, like at 798, you could get away a little bit more. But sure.
But yeah. it was everywhere. In every city we went to. We probably went to 6-7 different cities in our time there.
Was it really good art? I mean, I mean, I've seen like graffiti where it's like, this sucks. Like,
big bubble letters.
You just defeated, you just destroyed this.
Vandalized
it, yeah. And then there's like art.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like the same form of paint being used, but in such a better way, which I guess is subjective and all. Like,
sure. The most powerful version that we saw was easily when we made the trip over to Palestine. And we were there for, what, half a day, maybe?
Yeah.
And we went there with just like a single goal in mind, and we ended up not even accomplishing it. But what we found there was beyond anything that we ever would have anticipated.
What was your goal, first of all?
When we crossed over into Palestine, where we went to Bethlehem.
Okay.
And
to see the Church of Nativity Church.
Yeah. The you know, supposed birth of Jesus Christ. And we ended up not even going there.
Bethlehem, is that in Palestine?
It is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It is, yeah. We didn't know that either.
So it's Jerusalem to Bethlehem is a 30-minute bus ride.
Okay.
And so we had rented our own car. We had thought about driving ourselves, which is doable, but because of car insurance and stuff, we were advised, don't drive your own car. And you don't know the area. Potentially there could, and especially being on the Israeli side, people were telling us, you know, there are terrorists on that side, on the Palestinian side. So, like, if someone wants to, you know, destroy something, or if they, you know, go after one of their knife attacks or something, your car could be injured. So, like, don't drive your car. So we're like, okay, we'll take the bus. And we did. It was 30 minutes. It was not a bad trip. And all of a sudden, it's like, it doesn't look different, but you can just tell, like, people are in a slightly different mindset.
Like more tense, you mean?
Yeah, part of it. I mean, it's a lot of complicated emotions. It seems.
Were there checkpoints along the way?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you kind of had this point where, like, okay, now we're in Palestine.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. As far as Israeli national policy goes, Palestine's not Israel. And it seems like they're actively denied civic rights, really. Yeah. We got off the bus, and first thing we do, we meet a driver to take us to this church, and his English is excellent. And he starts telling us about these other sites kind of around the city that we can also go visit. And that happens here, where, like, a driver is going to offer you this package. You can go to these other places, and I'll take you there, no problem. You spend as much time there, not...
Sure.
Yeah, it's okay, but then at the end, you know, you pay this much. And what he was describing sounded interesting. And the big ones were like, well, you want to go see the wall? You want to go see the literal wall between Palestine and Israel? So there's a lot of street art there. There's a lot of Banksy street art, which we have one downstairs.
What's Banksy street art?
Banksy is, what does he call himself? He's like
he's a
group.
Graffiti. Oh, he's a guy?
Yeah, he's like, calls himself like a graffiti terrorist or something like that.
Oh, is that the one with the flowers? Like,
yes.
Yeah, yes. Okay, I know what you mean. Yeah. That just sounded weird. Like, the name sounds strange to me.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of looks like a bank. He's Banksy. Yeah.
We were surprised, though, because I was like, Banksy, I've been, you know, hearing his name ever since college, like, you know, 8 years ago. So when I realized, though, there's Banksy work here in Bethlehem, in this little bitty town. And the guy was like, yeah, he's all over the wall. I didn't even realize there was a wall. So I was like, what wall? And he was like, the wall that separates Palestinians from being able to enter into Jerusalem. So this is their main checkpoint. Like, Palestinians, this is the only way into Jerusalem, into Tel Aviv, into Tiberias, Haifa, anywhere else. That's the only way in. And they have this massive wall put up to block them.
I guess you're just drawn to walls.
Yeah, I guess so.
Happens to be another one close to Beijing.
Right. Yeah, Great Wall, Berlin Wall, yeah. Wailing Wall, the whole world's all walls, right?
Yeah, it's all about walls.
And now in the U.S., right?
Starting to... Oh, God.
Yeah, near your home.
Right, yeah. In Texas.
Let's build a few more.
That was a beautiful thing that the taxi driver was talking about, was how, like, there's a problem between two people, and your solution is to divide them, is to, like, just isolate them from each other. I was like, that's not a solution.
Yeah.
And you get this in teaching a lot, like two kids are having trouble with them. So you separate them, you have them sit at different seats. Well, that's like a Band-Aid. That's not getting to the root of whatever issue caused it. And that's certainly not promoting the skills necessary to like overcome that problem that's at the root. So that's what I do, they slapped a wall up there and it seems like a good idea to a lot of people. It's interesting to see, you know, like people in different places at different time periods keep repeating their mistakes or just keep,
Was there a wide range of opinion about what should happen there among the people you spoke to in Israel and in Palestine? I mean, it sounds like you met a lot of people.
It's the best part of our trip with the people, for sure.
Yeah.
actually, not a wide range of opinion on solutions. A wide range of opinions on, you know, the problems that are happening, for sure, on both sides.
It was interesting, though, because from the Palestinian side, you know, they were talking about, like, the military, the Israeli military. We drove past the soccer field where kids play, and there's this net hanging down, and the guy's pointing at the net, like, do you see those? Those little canister Coca-Cola sized bottles. Yeah. What are those? Those are gas bombs. Like they've been throwing
gas
bombs. Yeah. Tear gas over the children's soccer fields. And so like on that end, we're kind of like, oh my gosh, so disturbed. Like why would they be messing with these children? But then on the other end, when we're back in Jerusalem on the Israeli side, we see 17, 18 year olds. I mean, I'm sure they're supposed to be 18, and I'm sure they probably are, but they look young, very young, male and female, holding these massive assault rifles, these huge guns, and they're just walking around the city, everywhere, in groups. And
so they're Israeli military.
Yeah. But a thought we had was how these young people that are, you know, barely adults, really, and they're given these guns and so much power, and they're watching over this line, this wall. So, of course, if they're aggravated, they're also, they're younger, so they might react faster than someone with a little bit more age who's able to think, you know, that's a seven-year-old down there. Of course a seven-year-old's going to throw rocks at this tower that they've been, you know, taught to hate almost. Yeah, like that's, we saw another wall with over 314 names of children who had been throwing rocks at the tower, and all of a sudden they decided to take them out with guns. And
how many?
It was over 314 children.
This was a few years ago. This was 2014.
Yeah.
And there's something like over 2,000 Palestinians killed by the Israeli armed forces in the Gaza Strip alone, which is not where Jerusalem is, or not where that's a part of Palestine that's like on the Mediterranean, where Jerusalem, Bethlehem's more inland geographically,
like by Jordan.
And that's that over 2,000. That number was just this Gaza Strip, which is really small piece of the overall Palestinian territory. And yeah, these numbers, these names, really actually very similar to like Vietnam Memorial in Washington D.C. Like just names on a wall. And it was strictly children that had been killed in this conflict that happened one summer, like 1 month, 3 years ago. And it is the situation that Aaron described, where like it's already a tense situation. And you have, you know, fresh adults responsible for maintaining whatever it is. Possibly hot-headed, possibly not. And of course, we're hearing this from the Palestinian side, so there's potentially that bias, but like,
sure,
this man spoke so righteously about it, and not like, not out of grievance, like they're only to blame this way, but like out of grief, like this needs to stop, like this, like, do you think this problem's over with this wall up? No, there's the problem's every day. It's every day. He drove us past a memorial of a, it looked like a teenage boy who had been a sniper, had picked him off. Like just outside, it was outside of a UN chartered school in Bethlehem.
Wow.
There was like a memorial put on him. He drove us through a refugee camp that actually was a significant portion of Bethlehem. And oh man, like you just see the ravages of this conflict in the city and in the people. And just, but then you cross over the other side to Jerusalem and you like, you don't see that. Other than like armed soldiers patrolling the streets, you don't see like, oh, this is a burned tower from a recent conflict, or this is, you know, leftover, this is a rubbled building from when I was like, you see that instantly when you cross over into Palestine.
Well, did you guys feel like you had a connection to Israel before you went? So, like for example, I'm not Jewish. I'm not Muslim. I've never been to the Middle East other than Dubai now. But I don't have much of, I don't have many. I have some friends who are from Israel, but like not too many.
Right.
I'm not super well connected with that part of the world. Are you guys the same, or were you the same?
Yes. Yeah.
Not well connected.
Yeah. So
maybe part of the draw, actually.
Yeah, we had looked at a few places maybe to travel, and like we had looked into Morocco, and then we had looked at Israel, and yeah, but like immediately once we realized Israel was a place we wanted to go, I did a little research, and I was like, yeah, this is, I mean, we know it's a small country, but can we drive it? Oh yeah, we can drive it like pretty easily. So in that sense, yeah, like we didn't know much, and through research and then going, and now after going, I would live there for sure. I mean, it was a beautiful place. I know after seeing the wall, I would like to go help volunteer on the Palestinian side, just because
it sounds like it affected you guys pretty severely.
Yes. Yeah.
Because we don't have that connection, we went in with a lot without expectations and not knowing people who've been there. Oh, you gotta go do this, you gotta see this, or this is so great. We didn't know any of that, so we went in not primed to think anything, which is a fantastic way to do it. And without expecting to, this half day trip into Palestine became maybe the greatest takeaway from it. Seeing the wall, having this extended conversation with people living there, seeing real life devastation. I remember being a kid in school growing up, hearing about conflicts specifically between Israel and Palestine, and then like never in my wildest dreams thinking that I would like be present for what's going on. And that's something we talked about, is how like in the U.S. you kind of hear about that, or like we heard about that then, maybe let's say a decade ago, or at this around the 2000s. It's like it almost, but we don't really hear about ongoing things. It's almost it's over. The problem is over. Like,
oh, is that how you? I kind of think of it like it's just always happening, and
it's not worth talking about.
It's anymore. Until something super serious happens, it's not worth talking about. I mean.
And then how subjective is that, right? Like,
right, that's the thing. I don't know anything. Yeah, exactly. I mean, man, I'm so focused on other parts of the world that just kind of gets left behind for me.
Right. That was one of the guy that drove us around, the taxi driver. That was one of his big questions. Like, what do you guys hear? Like, you know, as Americans, what do you hear? Well, as Americans living in China, what do you hear? And I was like, to be honest, about this, about stuff in Israel, nothing. Like, I don't hear anything about you guys. And he was like, so you know, in 2014, you didn't hear about 2,000 people being killed. I was like, definitely not.
He uses the word massacre.
Right.
Again, and that's the word he used.
Yeah.
Wow.
And,
no, I don't remember hearing that at all.
At all.
Yeah.
And it's not like I don't watch the news or something. Like, I try to keep up.
Right.
It's things like, on the flip side of that, like, if it had been, say, a Palestinian suicide bombing or, like, some sort of, where, like, something had happened on the Israeli side, maybe we would have heard more about
it. Yeah, that definitely would make the news.
Yes.
There was some sort of statistic or something, like, For every like one Israeli you hear killed in this conflict, there's like 50 Palestinians killed. The numbers he had told us was something like there's like 9 million Israelis, and there's about 12 million Palestinians. And though the Palestinian side is denied these civic rights, like, well, nationality, being able to buy property, being able to vote, whatever, being able to use the airport. Simple things like even able to cross over, like special visas to use hospitals that are over on the other side that are clearly better. They're denied these things, and yet the Israeli government controls their electricity, their water, their heat, their power.
They have, we drove past some, he called them compounds, like these homes that they would just confiscate the land and then build these homes and put up another fence around it with this big old barbed wire. And we drove past and I was looking and I was like, is that one of the compounds? Yeah, it is. So they apparently ask, like, Americans and Russians and people from other foreign countries, come live in Israel. We're going to set you up real nice in this compound over on this side. So basically they're taking Palestinian land even more so, and but doing it with foreigners who would likely be like us. They don't really know any different. Like, if someone asked me to go live in Israel, I'd be like, yeah, sure. Sounds great, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to even form a strong opinion on this for me because I hear all these stories, but then there's plenty on the other side that, like, I've got plenty of Jewish friends and Israeli friends. I've got some Israeli friends.
Of course.
And you got to realize or remember that they're surrounded by countries that have promised to wipe them off the face of the map.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, it's interesting, before we left, talking with Haysom about who's Egyptian.
Yeah.
A friend of Biba who's like, he asked me where I was going for Chinese New Year. He said Israel. He's like, oh, yeah, don't get your passport stamped. You'll never go over there. It's like, I can never go there. They'd probably kill me. Like, he was just like sort of casually throwing
out. Just laughing at it.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
But I do notice, like, a thing with travel in general is when I meet people who are from near another country, like they're in one country, they're near another one, a lot of the time they don't know much about it. I mean, maybe not in Europe, okay, that's like they're pretty open borders there, but if the borders are more controlled, it's like there's a lot of, just for lack of a better word, a lot of ignorance and a lot of, like, fear of these people who live, like, 50 miles away.
Media-based fear, I feel like.
Sure.
Ask Minnesotans or Wisconsins, what are the provinces of Canada?
Yeah, right.
What are the states in Mexico? Yeah. What do they say, Mexico DF? I know, one, but, like...
Yeah.
Ignorance, yeah. I mean, that is the word for it. It's an ugly word, but...
But it's true. It's true. Just these are our neighbors, and
ignorance breeds fear, right? It's easy to be afraid and to hate someone you don't know and understand.
Yeah, it's tough, and that's another great reason to travel. It erodes that ignorance. It erodes that fear.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even tell you the number of friends I have who are, like, worried for me that I live in China. Like, what? Are you kidding me? This is, like, the safest place.
Yeah, right. This is.
We do talk about, like, bikes getting stolen sometimes and, like, things like that, but come on. That's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah. Like petty theft would be, yeah.
Beijing is safer than Minneapolis, for sure. For sure.
I mean, we live on this hutong where I walk at night whenever, and I never feel, like, scared. Like, walk down the hall by, or the alley by yourself at night.
Yeah, I've never felt threatened in China.
Yeah, like, no.
Not even close.
Even walking around at, like, 3 in the morning in the middle of a big city and not knowing where I am, like, a lot of parts of the world I might feel like, oh, crap, I better be careful. Mm-hmm. But, nah, not in China.
Yeah. Actually, we were in Thailand over Christmas, and we got to meet the proprietor of the place we're staying at. And he had lived in China for a number of years, and he lived in a number of places in Asia. And he was talking about a business he had had in the Philippines for a few years, and how he had it got to the point where he had to hire a bodyguard to come with him to places. Mm-hmm. He had to start carrying a handgun around to walk around places in the Philippines. And Thailand, not really that case, but it's like China,
I've heard Manila's pretty shitty, but but the rest of it seems like really cool,
right?
And I wouldn't know enough to know, but it's like, like China, my 5 years in China, those communist countries they're safe. My experience in China is like they're super strict about some things, They're more free and open than America about so many other things. There's ironically more freedom here than I've experienced in living in America most of my life.
Yeah,
that blows my mind. Blows my mind still.
It's so interesting to learn what a country's really like.
Yeah,
I don't know. Even us talking about living here, people might be listening and. They might get some ideas of we might change their mind. But you can't really know what a place is like until you go. You just have to go for yourself.
It's so hard to describe.
I mean, another one that comes up constantly is the pollution.
Yeah.
And yes, it can be horrible, but right now we're sitting on the roof and there's a nice gentle breeze coming in. I hope it's not severely affecting the recording, but we're watching the sun go down and these puffy clouds. This could be anywhere.
Yeah, Pixar clouds, Disney clouds.
Yeah.
Look very nice.
Wonderful day.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, you've been here 5 years, Connor?
No, that's Aaron.
Oh.
Yeah, 5 years.
Yeah, she knows.
Quite a while, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I had moved over here, wanted to leave America, and off I went. Yeah, I had looked at Beijing, Tokyo, and Istanbul, which, I think Beijing was a great decision.
You specifically wanted to go to one of those three, or those were opportunities?
There were no really opportunities, to be honest. It was just, I was looking. I picked three cities that I thought I'd like to live in, and then I just looked and saw what kind of jobs are available, what can I do. Teaching English ended up being an easy option.
Yeah, that's a standby.
yeah. So I came over, didn't know anyone. It took me a month to find a job.
Oh, you had to look for a job once you got here?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I came over here, rented an apartment on my first day, and found a job within a month. And, it was...
Were you worried at all about not being able to find a job?
No, not really. I had Skyped with a guy who had a wife and twins, and he had told me, right now the jobs in China, they're so available. Like, even if you don't want to be in Beijing, you can go to a different city and you could find a job. And I was kind of I'm pretty confident in my in my ability to get a job. So I went to several interviews and I found a job after a month. And
sounds great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Was it a big learning experience, the different culture and working here?
Yes. Yeah, I had realized that the term teaching was a little bit looser than I had expected. It was more, singing songs, at least originally.
Well, how old were the kids?
The kids that I would have been, trying to get the job for would have been 5, 6.
Yeah.
So, it was a lot of singing songs. But I worked my way up. So, started off with a basic kindergarten, worked there for a few years, worked with government schools, And that was really interesting, seeing their morning rituals of E-R, sons, and
like counting.
Yeah, the counting, but doing the morning exercises as they count.
I guess I have heard of this.
Yeah, so they'd go through everything from the neck, rolling the neck in the one direction, rolling it in the other, rolling the hips in one direction, then the other, doing the arms.
Loose for the long day.
Right. Okay. I did that for about a year, and then now I'm working with an international school. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Are you teaching the same age kids?
Now I'm back with a Montessori age. So now I'm with 3-year-olds. So even younger.
Oh, little ones.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so cool. I had gone from, very young up to 5th grade, and then 5th grade back down to the really young ones. They're more fun.
Well, so the kids you teach now were not even born yet when you first came to China.
Right. Huh. Yes.
Or even conceived.
Mm. Right. I had not thought about that, but that's true. Huh. Yeah.
And now they're running around and speaking to you.
Right. Yeah.
That's strange.
Yeah. It is good.
Goes by quick.
It does.
And how long have you been here, Connor?
Two and a half years.
Now. Okay. So, same as me.
Yeah. Yeah, extremely similar.
Oh, all right.
So it would have been August 2014, I think.
Yeah, that's when we moved here. Yep.
Yeah. You and Katie came together at the same time?
Yep, same flight. First time in Asia together.
Wow, man. And you were in South America for how long?
2.5 years. But that was just travel. That wasn't working at all.
Right. Yeah. South America. I've been there one time.
Oh, which country?
Ecuador. I was there for a summer.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to like retire there. I want to live in South America for sure.
Specific place in Ecuador or like that you wanted to? You found that you'd want to retire?
Yeah, it was. I did this through my college, so it was the summer between my junior and senior year. And it started as like a study abroad. You go there, you do some like public works or community building things, and you take some classes, and you just sort of live there. And we're in Quito for like a weekend, but then we spent our time in Otavalo, which Ecuador is divided up almost in like these three vertical stripes, where it's like jungle on the coast, mountains in the middle, jungle on the other side. And Quito, Otavalo are both in this like middle section, in the mountainous area.
Yeah.
And yeah, Otavalo is like nestled in this valley among the mountains, just around like you could throw a rock and just hit any of these ones. It was just sublime. And that's, I mean, that's not a word you just throw around, really.
Nah. That's... That's too bad. I went through Otavalo, but I wasn't there on their market day. It's a famous city for this market.
Yeah,
I missed it. And so I just went. I think maybe I stayed there overnight one night, or maybe it wasn't even overnight, because I was going to Colombia. So I went into Colombia.
How are your experiences there?
In Colombia?
Yeah.
Ah, it's awesome. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, man.
It's like, what I spent like 3 months there.
What countries did you all hit?
All of them.
Well,
there's 13 in South America, so it's not like Europe or Africa. It's like 50 countries.
What are the small ones? Is like Suriname or Guyana?
Yeah, there's three. There's Guyana, Suriname, and French Guiana.
All right.
And they're all part of the Guianas.
Okay.
Which is this geographical region that it's not in the Amazon basin, and it's not in the Orinoco basin.
All right.
It's just kind of in between. And they're the three kind of oddballs very few people go to.
Sure.
But, yeah, I happened to go to all three of them. And
I bet you saw amazing things.
In 2.5 years?
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's on our list for sure.
Yeah, you got to do it. Do you guys speak Spanish at all?
He does.
Yeah, I do. I studied in high school, and then I wouldn't have used it for college. This experience when you kind of have to use it.
Oh, well, I guess you must have learned some there.
Enough, for sure. Yeah. And then wouldn't have used it until 3 years later till we went to Guatemala last year at Chinese New Year. And then we were there for 2 weeks. And like amazingly, something like snapped or something tripped one day. It was like 3 days in, and then like it just came back. Yeah. I was like stumbling over Chinese the first few days, or like mixing up Spanish and Chinese like no other. Yep. Of course. But then,
which sounds weird, but I can attest. I
Claro, claro, claro que doy. Claro que doy.
Like, same thing happens to me.
Yeah. But what, it just like flooded back, and I was awesome. I was able to help us navigate to where we were. I was very surprised, and it revived this love of communicating with people, of learning language, and
it's great.
And yeah,
I remember like a few months into my trip, like I had done a minor in Spanish, so I knew it fairly well, and I'd lived in Mexico for a bit, but then I hadn't used it for several years. And I was kind of like, God, I can never get this language down. I cannot speak it. And then a couple months into my trip, just one day, it just kind of clicked with me.
Mm.
It was almost like Neo in the Matrix. And I was like, I speak Spanish. And then,
and Kung Fu.
And then, yeah, from then on, I was like, oh, yeah, this is easy. Huh, okay.
So
hasn't happened with Chinese yet.
Now?
Yeah, I'd say I still am. Yeah. I mean, I've talked with a couple of people in Spanish in the last like year, and like native speakers. And I tend to be able to understand almost everything they say. Sometimes I have a hard time articulating. Like, my vocabulary is a little bit limited.
Yeah, sure.
But I'm confident I could go back to a Spanish-speaking country for even just a week, and it would just be flowing like really well.
That's amazing.
But it's not like that with my Chinese. I mean, I'll need a few more years.
Now I wonder if, like, you left China for a number of years and then somehow found yourself later in a situation where you're around Chinese again, that a similar sensation would happen. Like, it would flip, and then you all of a sudden realize you had more than you ever knew you knew.
Yeah.
Like, ideally, hopefully.
Yeah. It kind of happened 2 years ago. And I was my Chinese has gotten much better since then, but I went away from China for a couple months. I went to Australia for a couple months, and then I traveled around like Vietnam and Cambodia for a while, and then as soon as I walked into China, because I walked across the border from Vietnam, it was like I heard Chinese being spoken for the first time in a while, and I was like, I understand what they're saying. This is weird. Why? But it wasn't quite like the fluent level. It was just like, oh, this is just kind of cool. Like, this is something I can do. Like, I can handle it.
Confidence building.
It's a good feeling.
Do you have a favorite country you've been to? Place you visit?
It's hard, and there's just so many great things about like everywhere I go, but I think Bolivia stands above everything else, and I loved it there. And
what about it?
Go on.
What about Bolivia?
Oh, well, I was gonna, before I get to that, I was gonna say, I think, well, China is definitely the country I've been to the most now, the longest, other than the United States, obviously.
Sure.
Bolivia is second. I stayed there for 6 months, and that was just traveling for 6 months. Yeah. Bolivia has like everything except for a coast. There's no beaches, but the capital is way up in the mountains. It's like 3,500 meters. La Paz, and so that's like 11,000 feet. So there's all this Andean culture, and similar if you go to like Peru, to southern Peru, there's a lot of Andean culture there too. But there's a lot more tourism in Peru, and it's still awesome. It's still a great place to go. But Bolivia just feels like not quite so ruined. Not that Peru's been ruined. Well, I shouldn't say it like that.
Tourists are the worst people like around the world.
I know. You got to be careful there, because like, I am a tourist. I can't really disparage them.
You can't help but be a tourist in some places.
Yeah. Well, put it like this. In Peru, there are... you will have groups where there's like a bunch of people who have never left America, and they get on the bus and they drive them to a place, and they get off and take their pictures and get back on the bus and buy their expensive souvenirs from the funny people dancing in their silly outfits, and they go, oh, the people are so nice. Okay, that exists in Peru. It doesn't exist in Bolivia.
Interesting.
There still is a backpacker scene in Bolivia.
How would you get, would you take buses, or how would you?
Yeah, buses. I mean, there's one train. No, there's a couple trains in Bolivia. The country used to be a lot bigger, and part of the reason they're so poor is because they've lost several wars against their neighbors. And so like Chile defeated them in a war, and they took away the strip of coast that they had, like the northern part of Chile used to be Bolivia. And what tends to happen is the country defeats Bolivia in a war, and then as like a reconciliation or consolation prize, they build a railroad. And so Bolivia has a few of these. And there's one leading
to commemorate.
In.
Right.
I mean, maybe I'm saying that not quite right, but that's how I think of it. I came in from Brazil once across the Pantanal, which is it's like a swampland, and it's a pretty popular, a giant area, but a pretty popular area for tourism versus the jungle, because there's, you've got a lot of the same wildlife as in the jungle, but not as much vegetation blocking it, so you can actually see it better.
Sure, more accessible.
Yeah, more accessible. And so there's this train called the Death Train, and I guess when it first opened, there was a lot of malaria and a lot of like disease that would kill people, and now it's like kind of all that stuff's like a joke now. Maybe I'm being a little insensitive, but I joked around like the Death Train needs a new name. So I took that train.
Rebirth, the resurrection train.
Yeah, the rebirth train. Yeah. That's a better name for it.
Yeah. When I went to Ecuador, we were advised to take these like malaria pills in anticipation of the potential.
Yeah.
And like some of the people in my group did, and they had these weird side effects I've never heard of in any drugs before. Like they were having nightmares.
Yeah.
Like extremely vivid nightmares.
Yeah.
Because of these pills. Yikes! Like.
Yeah, and I'm writing my second book about South America now, my time there.
Is it like a nonfiction?
Nonfiction. Okay. It's a travelogue.
Excellent.
And so the first one's out already, and the second one I hope to have out in like this coming summer.
Wow.
And part of my experience there involves some of these malaria pills.
Would you have tried them?
The pills?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
I just have some bad memories since. The nightmares that you get can be horrible and vivid. Like, you think it's real life.
Right.
Like, you don't, like, when you're dreaming, it's pretty easy to tell that you're dreaming, you know, or it doesn't quite feel real. It just feels like we're here, and then all of a sudden, you wake up, and it was just a dream.
Yeah.
And depending on the person, they don't affect everybody like that.
Sure.
This is like, Mefloquine was what I took.
Okay.
So it's to me, what it sounds like is more like a night terror. So like I have really bad nightmares, and I also have night terrors. So night terrors, you don't know that you're sleeping, and it seems very physical. Like
she'll move. Yeah.
I'm moving. To me, my entire nervous system thinks that it's like really happening in front of me. So I'm like reacting. It's very physical, whereas a nightmare is, you know, you're in bed, but you're kind of like comatose, actually. You know, your eyes are moving and whatnot. Yeah, so night terrors, it's more really interactive. It's like that kind of.
Huh. Well, I don't know if I was moving
much
or at all.
Sure.
I might have had that paralysis that normally happens. Okay. But I know in my head what I felt like way different than a normal dream or even a nightmare. And it's been known to like cause almost like psychotic breakdowns in people. And like if you're prone to depression, it can make you like suicidal. Mm. I mean, it's almost worse than malaria.
It sounds like it.
Maybe I should not take them. I already have very bad nightmares. Yeah.
I haven't had malaria. I mean,
this is the worst thing. The cure for malaria, the what they usually use, is. The same pill. The same pill you use to prevent it, you use to cure it, but you take a super strong dosage. You take like four times the normal dose.
You will have nightmares. You will go through this.
Yeah.
You will.
Yeah, yeah. And so it can be just terrifying.
You have to take one every day?
No, there's different pills. There's completely different medicines that they use. This is only one of them. And this one, the advantage is you only have to take it once a week.
Oh.
That's with Mefloquine, and I there's a couple other names for it. I think Larium is another name for it. Only once a week, and if you forget for a night, you're probably still protected. You're okay. There's other types that you take it like you have to take it every day, and if you miss a day, you're not protected that day. And the other side effect of that type, maybe they don't have the psychotic side effects, but you can become much more susceptible to sunburn. So if you have like a fair complexion, you get burned easily. Mm. And then there's different.
Yeah, no.
There's different strains of malaria, and so the ones in South America tend to be not that bad. But then some of the African ones especially can be way worse. Mm. And they can be resistant to some of these drugs. So you have to, like, look by what region you're going to. Mm. And obviously I'm not a doctor, and I'm not giving out medical advice to anybody. Right. But this is just kind of what I know about these pills.
I know a few of my friends who are from Africa, their eyes are more yellowed. And they've said it's because
of... Like jaundice, kind
of? Yeah, yeah. And they have told me, and again, yeah, this isn't, you know, coming from a doctor, but that the cause is from they have contracted malaria and have had to take the pills. And it's happened, you know, a numerous number of times as they were growing up. So now their eyes, the white part is actually yellow. Yeah.
God. I remember the day we got into Guyana, I was traveling with my friend Craig, who's Australian. And so Guyana is one of those three kind of off the beaten path countries.
Suriname, and Guyana, French Guinea.
You got it. And so Guyana, they speak English, and it's a former British colony.
Mm-hmm. That was Jonestown, right?
Guyana. Yep, Jones. Yeah, yep, that's right.
Continue.
Jim Jones was there.
The man himself.
Read up on that one.
Christ.
Yeah. The next
coming. The second
coming. Yeah, that's
anyway,
right.
Continue.
Anyway, the day we got into the country, I had some malaria pills left still, but Craig had to buy some. And so we went to this clinic, and this guy talked to us, and he was like the local expert on malaria from this little town called Lethem. And I just remember him being a very black-skinned man, and his eyes were just yellow.
Mm. Wow.
And he was speaking to us like, yeah, you have to be careful of malaria. And he just had this creepy look about him, like, this guy looks sick, and like he was really
perpetually
thin. Yeah, I bet he's gotten it a bunch of times.
Yeah.
What does malaria even do? Like, of course you hear about it as being this negative thing. I don't know what it does to a person.
From what I understand, well, so first it's from a mosquito bite.
Mm-hmm.
And the mosquito's saliva has parasites in it, and those parasites get into your liver, and I don't know exactly what they do in your liver, but they cause severe fever. So the first thing you'll get is a fever, and then you'll get really cold.
The chills or something.
Yeah, you get a chill.
Like right now.
Like, it's getting a little chilly.
No, continue.
And it can feel like having the flu for some people, but far more severe for others. And it depends on the person. It depends on the strain. I think if you live in an area with a lot of malaria, you might get it enough that your body just kind of adjusts to having it. Some types, I think, can stay in your system for years. I remember meeting this guy. I met this guy in Colombia who was from Minnesota, actually. And he was a carpenter. And so his kind of life plan was, there's not a lot of work for carpenters in the winter. And he was, I think he had a girlfriend, but he didn't have any kids. And he was in his 40s.
Uh-huh.
Probably wasn't ever going to have kids. So in the winter when work was slow, he would just take off to some hotter part of the world. And it worked really well because that's like South American summer or Southern Hemisphere summer.
Yeah.
So anyway, I met him in Colombia, which is, it's weird. It's north of the equator, but it's in the tropics.
And it's close.
So it was his like 6 months off that half of his life he took off and traveled. And he said he got malaria really bad in Africa once. And it's still in his system. And like, so he'd go home and he'd be up on the roof, like doing carpentry, and he'd feel it coming on, like a new episode. Like it had been like maybe 3 months since he'd been sick, like the last time, and he'd just feel it. And he'd go to his friend like, okay, I gotta get off the roof now. In 15 minutes, I'm not gonna be able to walk. And he's just kind of living with it and dealing with it.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if it was going to be a lifetime thing for him or just like a few years, but it can certainly be years.
Wow.
Every few months he just has another attack.
I mean, you never know what's going to trigger something like that.
It's crazy, man. I mean, not that should discourage you from travel.
Of course.
You got to take precautions.
Be aware that that's a potential, but certainly not enough to keep you from doing it.
Mosquito nets are your friend.
Actually, in my classroom, one of the books is a nonfiction book described how like mosquitoes are responsible for more human deaths than any other animal.
Sure, yeah. Makes sense.
We're afraid of the big ones, but it's the little ones.
Yeah.
Mosquitoes and the fleas, right? From the Black Plague. Would that kill a third of Europe?
Wow.
Well, that's so actually in college, that was my major. I was did history and English, and I was able to double major within those. And just I've always loved history growing up. And yeah, I remember one salient fact from that time was like, if you could choose any time in history to live, like the single worst time in any period in any place to live would have been Europe in like the 1300s. 1300s, 1400s. Like
bad roll of the dice there.
Crusades, wars, plagues, famines. Yeah. Like it's everything. It's everything. Yeah. Like Europe, 1300s. Don't go. Don't go.
Yeah.
If there's a time machine, if there's a, yeah.
Don't pick that one.
Anyway.
And it may seem, it may not seem like it now, but this has to be the best time ever. I mean, almost without a doubt. Best time ever to be alive.
Yeah.
Right now,
people don't talk about that as much. I would agree. I'm inclined to agree.
Yeah.
But when we were traveling in Taiwan, and actually, I got to connect with an old friend of mine, one of my best friends growing up through like fifth grade, and then he moved to a different part of Minnesota. Hadn't seen him in over a decade, and now I found out that he's living in Taiwan. And so when we made that trip, we went to go meet up with him in Taipei. And he's living there with his brother, who I also remember from my time knowing him growing up. And that's one thing. They have a sister who was teaching international schools in Myanmar. I'm talking about just like a common joke among expats and foreigners here is like how there's some moments of just kind of like savagery or barbarism compared to what we're used to. Yeah. And like, anyway, like you talk about a place like Myanmar or some country in Africa or something like that. It's like next level, where like luxury, like running water is a luxury.
Yeah.
Like most of the world doesn't have running water.
Yeah, there are places where it would suck to be right now. I'm not saying everywhere is great.
Of course.
And there are places where it would have been a lot better a century ago, you know?
It's just crazy, but the discrepancy. Some places can like complain about not having some sort of luxury, and then like other places are like, I didn't die today. Like, it was a good day.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like that gap is somehow, well, first of all, still existent, and possibly, I don't know, getting bigger, getting smaller, I don't know.
The wealth gap worldwide, you mean?
Well, of course there's a wealth gap in America that's talked about a lot, right? It seems like in our time in China, the wealth gap here is even worse. Mm-hmm. But then, like, if you extrapolate that to a worldwide wealth gap, it's there. It's present and problematic.
There's this Swedish guy who's done a couple of these not YouTube, but TED Talks.
Yeah, sure.
I forget his name, though. But he's kind of this population expert guy. And damn, he's pretty old, but he's this total optimist. And he talks about all these amazing statistics, like how the really poor people are getting out of that, on a global scale.
Good.
It's going away.
Good.
And It's like, looks like a really bright future.
Yeah.
From his perspective. I'll have to show you guys like a couple of those little movies.
People need to be reminded of that stuff. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Aaron made the point about media as being like oppressively negative. Kind of. It seems that way. Or like.
Yeah. That's what sells.
That's what sells, right? That's what sells. That's what. It seems like people almost like have this sick fascination of hearing bad news.
Yeah.
So much so that like we don't pay attention to, or we don't hear, or it clouds those sort of things that would otherwise lighten our spirits or like keep us positive. Or
yeah.
Maybe in like a deranged sort of way, though, hearing something bad's happening somewhere else.
Mm.
Oh, my life's pretty good. Yeah. You know,
yeah, like, yeah, that's
really,
not me.
Really. Like, yeah, yeah. Like. In a backward sort of sense.
There's some social idea or psychological phenomenon. It's like, 2,000 people were killed or massacred in Palestine 3 years ago. So, yeah, but my roof's leaking.
Yeah.
Like, I can't help it. Like, I gotta fix my roof.
Yeah, that's like, happening right now.
I can do it. Like, that affects me. Like, I gotta take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we care naturally more about problems that are like direct and immediate than anything that's obviously more severe way far away at some place that you can't even fathom what it's like.
Totally.
Like, that's just human nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a name for that. For that.
Oh, okay.
There's a term for that, and I forgot it, but...
Huh. It's like gravity dropping off with the cube root of the distance.
Science. Who needs it?
Something.
Oh, my gosh. I had a roommate for a year here. His name's Mike. Mike Austin. Katie plays... Plays a super funny guy. And he has this saying. He would say this so many times that, like... I don't know if he's, like, joking when he says it, or I don't know if he's serious or not. He's like, nah, that's science. I don't believe in science. Like, if, like, anything about technology or about something happening in the world, like, eh, sounds a lot like science. Don't believe in science.
Yeah.
It's like, and then that would be it. There wouldn't be any, like, added explanation to it. It's like, okay, are you serious right now? And so we've kind of, like, jokingly adopted that. And it's kind of fun to say, like,
but that's scientific. If you believe in that stuff, you know?
Whoa, it sounds like you're talking about science, and we're not going to have that conversation in this
house. Whoa! Come on now. Some of us don't believe in gravity here. All right,
you get that science out of here.
Not all of us are into that stuff.
Oh man, it's fun. It lightens the mood. Technology and science lets us down a lot. Unfortunately,
it sure does. But it's awesome at the same time.
Yeah, it is. Gosh.
We ought to get inside. It's getting a little chilly.
Let's
do it.
Sun's
almost down.
Let's do it.
We're going to go to a little whiskey sipping soiree.
Yeah. Actually, we got to slip up the whiskey for that.
I've got the perfect robe.
Yes.
All right.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening, and I want to thank my guests, Aaron and Connor, for coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. If you want to get more info about them or about the stuff that we talked about, you can go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number, 1000daysbetween.com. And I have a lot more facts about the stuff that we talked about, and we've got some photos up for you. Again, thanks for listening, and until next time, Sai Jian.